The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes, as always, here on a Saturday morning, talking about gambling addiction and hopefully humanizing compulsive gamblers like myself and giving people some insight into what the life of a compulsive gambler is like. He's been on like a 9-month vacation, but happy to join us. My sidekick and coach for this from Epic Global Risk Management is our friend Danny Trillaro. Dan, good morning. How you been?
I'm great, Craig. Yeah, vacation, sure. It's on the road, what, 70 of 90 days or so. It's been a busy start.
Now you're doing God's work from campus to campus. And happy to have a gambler in recovery joining us this morning as well. This is Chaz. Chaz, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, guys.
Good. What's when was the date of your last wager, if you don't mind me asking, to get right into it?
Yeah, you know, actually, I'm in a unique situation. My last wager was 2 days ago, so I am starting over.
Wow. Had you successfully gone a period of time without wagering and then kind of, you know, made some bad decisions 2 days ago, or is this your first attempt at kicking this?
Yeah, you know, before that, it was about 3 months. Okay. Before that, it was about 6 months. And before that, it was about another 6 months. So, you know, I've been in recovery now for about 3 years is when I decided to go and get help. And so it's been a battle for the last 3 years. And, you know, I did have a little bit of a lapse a few days ago, but I'm actually very confident after that lapse that I can continue on for another 6 months to potentially years afterwards. And I'm sure we'll get into exactly
I'm glad you're on the show, because a lot of times, you know, we're fortunate enough to talk to gamblers in recovery who have maintained recovery. And Dan and I frequently talk about the fact that it's never that simple, that while I'm working on 6 years of recovery and Dan's, you know, working on 12 and 13, when we started our recovery, there were moments like you've now experienced over the last couple of years when we had that lapse and went back and gambled. I'm wondering, though, for you this last time, a couple of days ago, was it similar to your previous lapses? Meaning, was it the same type of wager? Was it blackjack every time, sports every time? Or was this time different than the last two or three times?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was very similar. Unfortunately for me, it was due to, you know, March Madness. So it was a big event, obviously, going on over the weekend and with the Elite Eight and Sweet 16. And so I kind of fell trapped to, you know, just all the advertising, all the hype around March Madness, the hype around the sports, because, you know, I love sports and I'm sure we'll get into it, but sports are my life. Everything that I do and career choice wise has always involved sports in some fashion. And so, you know, for me, I really fell victim to the March Madness. Now, fortunately for me, it was a very small amount bet and I felt extremely guilty afterwards. And it is night and day from the amount that I have been wagering over the last 10 to 15 years of my addiction. And so I'm proud for the amount in a weird way to say it that way. Because I was able to recognize it, you know, very quickly and feel that guilt after I placed that bet.
The amount doesn't bother me. It's the fact that you were able to recognize I shouldn't be doing this and you didn't make a second bet or a third bet or an eighth bet. So the amount is almost irrelevant to me. If it was legitimately, you know, a one and done situation and you caught yourself and you felt guilty about it, it's the fact that you didn't follow the first bet up with another bet. So I do have to ask you the question, was it a one-time deal and you made a wager and felt like crap and, you know, went and talked to somebody and you didn't make a second, third, and fourth one? Or was it more than just one?
Yeah, so it was just a small parlay on the games. And, you know, I felt terrible kind of after I did place that bet. And all I did was refer back to, you know, the concept that I've created for myself called Find Your More. And I immediately fell back into the routine that I wanted to achieve, which is a healthier life mentally, physically.
Well, let me stop. Let me stop you there. Let me stop you. And I apologize for interrupting you. And Dan, I'll bring you here in 1 second, because I do want to hear your entire story, not just this lapse. You felt guilty after you placed the wager. And I want you to walk me through that. Was it like you hit the button and made the wager and you immediately had remorse about it? Did you feel a certain way because you lost? And like, here we go again. I'm throwing my money down the tubes. And I also want to get a sense of what did you feel like emotionally and physically as you were looking at the screen and you were in the process of making the wager before you hit send or enter whatever button you push? As you were doing it, did you feel a certain way?
Actually, to be honest, I won the parlay, which makes it even worse. I actually banned myself for 5 years on the FanDuel sports betting app. And I downloaded DraftKings. And so, you know, I actually had to go through the process of re-downloading the app. And during that entire time, I was just telling myself, you know, don't do it. What are you doing? Like, you know, you're doing so well. You know, there's other means to this, like, like you're getting better for a specific reason. And I kind of just, I was watching the games and it was just like, I was very hyped to watch some of the best teams and the best players, you know, performing in March Madness. And I kind of fell a little victim to what, you know, the hype around, the sports were. And obviously they were talking about a ton of lines. So,
sure.
You know, I felt guilty as I was downloading the DraftKings sports betting app. I felt guilty. You know,
well, here's
I kept telling myself, don't do it. And then, right. Next thing you know, the deposit's in and the parlay is bet.
That's fascinating to me. I want to get into that more with you. There is good news though, Dan, as Dan knows, and you don't know, Chaz, FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, Penn Entertainment, Fanatics Betting and Gaming, Hard Rock Digital, and Bet365 have done something that's never been done before. In the 5 years that sports wagering started to be legalized, this is a first, and it's monumental. They have created something called the Responsible Online Gaming Association. So the long and short of it is, if you excluded from FanDuel, all those other operators will honor that, and vice versa. And it's the first time ever that competing interests in the gambling space have agreed to get together and create what essentially amounts to, Dan, as like a national self-exclusion list. So you don't have to do it on every single site. And for you, if you had self-excluded from FanDuel, well, you can still bet on, you know, any of the other ones. You went to DraftKings. But now with this brand new, kind of unified group of operators, if you exclude on any one of them, you're now excluded from all of them, which is a very big deal, right, Dan?
Yeah, you know, we continue to see this moving in the right direction. And Chaz, thank you for sharing. You know, I saw you back in March up in New York, and it was great to see you. You know, and that's a step in the right direction, Craig, because we have the national helpline. Now we're starting to get a little bit more presence with a national quasi self-exclusion list. But Chaz, what you said is interesting. It's that tug of war between the emotional brain and the rational brain. You knew what you were doing. You didn't want to go down the path, but then emotionally that takes over. And you keep going down the path. And it was the things that Craig and I talk about. Craig, you and I talk about parlays, same game parlays, the money maker for the house, right, for the operators, the marketing. These are all the things that play with the emotional regions of the brain. Makes it really difficult to turn off for people with a strong personality trait that, you know, high in athletics like myself, like you, like Craig. So I find it interesting that the bet size was small, because typically you don't go back to less than where you left off. And I think you kind of hit it on the head where you kind of knew what you were doing. You didn't want to do it, but you're just doing it anyway. And I can relate to that a lot. So
sure.
I think I'm glad that what Craig just said about the Responsible Operator Online Gambling Association, about forwarding this, you know, self-exclusion list, is only going to help for those types of situations.
And I'll tell you one more, you know, and we'll start with this, the beginning of your story here in a second. The fact that you won the parlay and didn't go down the same road you went down previous times says a lot about your maturity and where you are in recognizing that it's not healthy for you to gamble, because there are a lot of people, myself included, you know, that put these like self-tests in front of them to see if they can gamble responsibly, because, you know, we want to gamble again. And I've told the story, and Dan is as well, that, you know, not every single aspect of my gambling history was bad. The big picture, it
Correct,
was bad,
yeah.
And it cost me everything I had in life. But there are still moments in my life when I was gambling where I loved it. I enjoyed it. And it was positive. And the fact that you went back and won, and that didn't send you down a bad path to follow that win up with another wager, is a really good place for you to be. Now, When did it start for you? How old were you when you first got exposed to gambling?
Oh, man. You know, it's hard to pinpoint the exact time, but I'd have to say when I was 14 years old, roughly, you know, just very casual betting with friends, whether it was, you know, I bet I can run faster than you, or, right. you know, I bet I can, you know, beat you in a, I can throw the baseball farther than you. It all just started at a younger age when I really started to get very competitive with my neighborhood group of friends and Little League baseball and hockey for that matter, because those were my two sports. So you always were betting with the guys, you know, on being better than them, but sure. maybe there was no monetary value attached to it, but the fact that you were, you know, repeatedly saying, I'm going to bet you this, that I can bet throw, I can throw farther than you. I bet you lunch. I bet you, you know, whatever it is. It just slowly started to build after that. And then just the competitive nature took over.
Got it. We'll take a quick break. We'll hear more from Chaz and Dan right after this on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Dan Treloar with Epic, of course, and Chaz joins us. Fascinating story. Unfortunately, 2 days ago during the Elite Eight, Chaz made a wager for the first time in a little while, and is now resetting his number from a recovery standpoint, but seems to be in a very good mind space and emotional space, which I'm pleased to hear. When you stopped gambling the first time, the second time, the third time, for a lot of people, there's a, you know, for lack of a better term, a bottom of the barrel moment. You got in trouble, a girlfriend, a wife, someone found out, you kind of got exposed as someone who was gambling uncontrollably and irresponsibly. This time sounds different in that you recognize right after you made the wager you shouldn't have, you won money on the wager, and you didn't follow it up with more wagers. What was it like, though, for you the first time? And did you have a bottom-of-the-barrel moment that led you to first seek out help?
Yeah, I mean, probably my final year of college, I started to realize that it was getting really bad. I was about 23 years old. I was asking my father for money to help me kind of pay off a bookie. And, you know, that's when I really started to realize that there is a potential problem here. And, but that didn't scare me straight. You know, I was able to get that guy paid off. And then as I'm starting to make more money, you know, graduating college, having more paychecks rolling in, that's when the bets started to take over again. And so I was in a very good relationship at the time. I was in a fantastic relationship for about 7 years with, my first college girlfriend. And, you know, she had no idea about any of the gambling issues. I was able to mask it for, you know, essentially my entire life before I started telling my story. Nobody knew that I had a gambling problem of any sort. I was living essentially two completely different lives. I had the Chaz that, you know, the personality wise that I had when I was 16, 17 years old, when I was bubbly, charismatic, you know, fun to be around and just really always wanting to help other people and be there for other people. But I was never there for myself on the dark days. And so I was able to live two completely different lives for a very long time. And it affected my relationships, not very indirectly at the same time, because it was my emotional state and my depression and my anxiety that was starting to take over as I got older, because real life really started to settle in when I was 25, 26, 27 years old, because you're supporting yourself. You're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life. And for me, I had a fantastic job. I was working for a startup sports drink company, and I was in a great position with equity in the company and so forth. And, you know, I was able to separate my work life to my personal life, because that's just how good and hard of a worker I am. My family instilled great values within me from childhood all the way through adulthood. And so I'm a hard worker, I'm hard everything, right? But there was still that extra layer to me, which was I was battling an addiction that I did not come to terms with because my fear of judgment from other people. I wanted to be the perfect person, and that ultimately took over, and that was ultimately my downfall. I went through a lot of, you know, really great relationships. I was previously engaged. That affected that. We didn't go through with the wedding. I ended up calling off the wedding. And, you know, it's just there's so much that was going on in my 20s. When I turned 30 years old, it took me that long to even seek out therapy and to get help. Rock bottom for me was the suicidal thoughts, was the I was ready to end it all. And I woke up one day, I was walking up my staircase at my townhome, and I was ready to go to my favorite place in Arizona and fall asleep in my truck and just never wake up. And I had means to fall asleep and not wake up. And that's kind of how I was going to do it. And for me, my dog saved my life. He was sitting in front of the door and he was kind of just looking at me and thinking to himself, you know, what hike are we going on? What walk are we going on? I'm ready to go. Wagging his tail. And I sat there for, you know, about 5 minutes just staring at him. And him and I sat down in the kitchen and I didn't do it. I didn't go through with it. And then after that moment, it was time to get help.
What was the feeling then? Financial troubles were too much to overcome, relationship troubles were failed. What was the driving force emotionally for you to contemplate suicide?
Yeah. I was just exhausted. I was exhausted. You know, the emotional toll of getting phone calls every single morning for, you know, 10 years, it seemed, whether I owed money or whether I was trying to get money from my bookie so I could pay off other debts, because there were times when I was up big. I mean, I started to bet. It started off with, you know, $20 when I was younger, but it escalated to I was doing tens of thousands of dollars a game on random games, right, even. And so, you know, the legality is when it really started to come in. And in Arizona, it was September of 2021. It got legalized. And so, you know, so that's when FanDuel came out. And then that's when the addiction really started to take over before I decided to get help. But before that, it was the bookies, right? It was the constant phone calls, the constant, you know, I can't go to bed anymore. My health is starting to, you know, go completely the opposite direction of where I wanted it to go. You know, I had a hip surgery in 2019 and boredom settled in. So it's like I felt all the emotions. When I was bored, I was betting. And so I've been down the emotional roller coaster. And that specific day when I was walking up the staircase, I was just exhausted. Absolutely exhausted.
And you feel for sure that if your dog isn't there that day, you're not here today. You feel strongly about that.
100%.
Dan, I want to bring you in on this because yeah. One of the things I've noticed in talking to younger people, you know, kids in their, you know, young 20s, college kids, as you do, obviously, every day of the week, is that I wouldn't say it's 100% commonality in this, but I found a trend for sure, at least in my experience, that a lot of compulsive gamblers, especially younger men who are compulsive gamblers, have a similar character trait in that they're very competitive. They like to play sports. They like to compete against the clock, against other people. And it's the same drive of competition that also hinders them in the gambling world because they don't like to lose. And that kind of manifests itself in the desire to bet more to win.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out because, you know, Chaz and I have similar background. We both race triathlon. We're both highly competitive athletes, you know, and what, Craig, what you just hit on, the personality traits matter, you know, a fear of failure, competitive nature, a risk taker. Those three are paramount. And then you start looking at athletes who try and try and try again, and they get better because they practice. So they've conditioned themselves to know that if I continue to work at this thing, I will figure it out and I will get better. I know I struggle with that. It sounds like, Chaz, like you did the same. It's like, I'm going to figure out a damn way to make this work, and it's going to get better. I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to keep trying. And then the shame starts to build, and then the guilt starts to build. And then all of a sudden, you're in this endless cycle. You're trapped in a mental prison, and you can't get out of it. And those are some of the personality traits that lend themselves to addiction. It can make you wildly successful, but it can also lead you down a path of destruction.
So do you find, Chaz, that one of the reasons you're relapsed, for lack of a better term, is that you need something to do that you don't have right now, a hobby, a place to be, some type of goal-oriented something in your life, or is that not the issue for you?
You know, it's really hard, right, because I know in my mind that I can beat this addiction. I know that I really have beaten it to a point of now I can actually live my life. You know, as Dan mentioned, I do triathletes now, so I do Ironman, which are great for my mental health. I do marathons as well. And so, you know, I've never been an endurance athlete. I always played baseball and ice hockey pretty much my whole life. And now I live in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. So, you know, I get to play golf. And so, you know, I take my time very to myself now, and I do exactly what I want to do, which are those kind of endurance activities like the Ironmans because it's the training. Sure. It's the every single
day. Do you
day.
Get, just out of curiosity, do you get worried that you'll be on a golf course out there in Scottsdale and a guy being totally innocent is like, hey, you know, let's play like a $5 NASCAR or something like that, that you'll do that or no?
You know, and that's where I struggle with too. Like, where's my line? You know, blackjack never did it for me. Casinos never did it for me. It was strictly just sports betting. I loved looking at the lines. I loved analyzing the games. I loved the mathematics behind it all, right? And I loved the payouts. I loved everything about it. Golf never really did it for me either. I have played some gambling games with friends on the golf course, but most of the time it's like I buy them lunch type of thing. So I'm in that in between of like, where's the gray line for me in my life? Because I love golfing, it actually brings me a ton of joy, and it doesn't take me back to like, okay, now I got to go look at, you know, BYU versus like New Mexico sure. State because God, I'm right back in it, you know, in like the most random game. And so for me, it's trying to find that really that life balance, and that's where I've now structured and my life has led me to, because now I'm creating more content around the risk of sports gambling, and I'm going to really utilize and grow my network on YouTube and social media to bring awareness to sports gambling and risk through my self-made concept that really ultimately saved my life.
So is the goal at full abstinence, or do you see your life's goal from a gambling standpoint? Well, I'm not going to bet on sports anymore, but you know, I'm okay if I bet a little bit on a golf course or a little bit on an Ironman or whatever the case may be. Or are you looking to be completely free of any type of gambling?
No, I'm looking to be completely free. At the end of the day, like, that's the ultimate goal because that's where I want to be in my life. But I think the biggest thing that I've noticed with, you know, my generation, I'm 33 years old. I think the biggest thing I've noticed with my generation with talking to people who have reached out to me on Instagram or wherever and, you know, asking for help or asking for their story is when they do relapse, they're like, you know, forget it. I'm going all in, right? This is going to be my life. This is it. And so for me, it's really trying to, those people that reach out for help, instill a concept within them that works for them, that way they can, they know that they can continue on with a very good life. And hey, okay, you put $20 on that game or you did have a relapse, but you don't need to go all in to where you were for the last decade of your life because you already know what that's going to be. You know, you can immediately flip the switch and get back to exactly what you want to do in life. And you can continue to beat this addiction because unfortunately for us, it's the accessibility. It's the advertising. It's going to be there for the rest of our lives. And there's nothing that we can do as, you know, gambling addicts in recovery to prevent that moving forward.
I'll tell you this. I'm going to let you go after this and then Dan and I wrap it up. Is for someone who just wagered a couple days ago, and is probably feeling some type of emotional reaction to that, of disappointment, as you described earlier in the show. And Dan, please jump in on this. You sound like you're in a really good place mentally and emotionally. Like, you know, this you know, setback is something that you're going to immediately overcome, and it's not going to be a life setback. It's a moment in time that you understand, you own it, you're honest about it, you're not denying it, you're not hiding it, you're not lying about it. And it seems like it also has not sent you down the bad road again. And that's very unique in this show to hear someone who's just, you know, done it and yet is fully in touch with who they are and who they want to be. Am I wrong on that, Dan?
Well, I think there's a process, right? And one thing you and I always talk about, Craig, you know, recovery is a journey. You know, and I think, Chaz, you know, whether or not we say you can gamble in the future, can't gamble in the future, you know, I always try to be where my feet are, always try to be present. And then I always think about, like, what can I control today, right? And it's that mentality of sometimes we start getting into our recovery journey and we start thinking too far ahead. And it's like, okay, I'm doing well, so I stop taking my medicine. Whatever the little things that make us successful in life, we stop doing them because we feel well. But as soon as we stop doing them, that's when it starts to creep back in. Like, that bet didn't occur 2 days ago. That process probably started sometime earlier. There was something else going on. That's what we typically find. And I think you do have a great awareness and you're owning everything. And Chaz, you know, I appreciate that about you. And it's another step along the journey of recovery because each one we learn from. And to Craig's point, you won the bet and you didn't chase it with another one. And there's something to be said for that. And I think it's important that people hear a good, honest story because recovery is never a straight uphill climb. It's a journey. It really is. And every journey has potholes and challenges, but anything worth doing is worth fighting for. So, you know, just continue that fight one day at a time, man.
Yeah, Chaz, I appreciate you sharing your story. I'm proud of you. It seems like you're in a good place. And just know that there's a lot of people out there, myself and Dan included, who are here for you. If you ever want to pick up the phone and reach out and just have a conversation, just need somebody to listen, you know, do you know at this point of your life that there are plenty of people out there that will be that, you know, phone call for you in case you decide to go down this road again. And Godspeed. I wish you the very, very best. And I hope that it was just an aberration that you own and can move forward from and not do again, because life sure is a lot better without gambling for people like us. And I appreciate you sharing your story very much today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks. Be well. All right, Dan, before we get out of here, great guest, because that's unique. It's the first time we've had a guest like that who literally 2 days ago made a wager but is in a really good place. And I think that's the important lesson here, that while we talk about recovery, what you just said is dead on. You know, while there's a lot of commonality in the traits of compulsive gamblers, recovery is very unique. And I think Chaz is proof of that, that, you know, three other times he failed at recovery, quote unquote, and failed's probably not the appropriate word. And here he is again, having made a wager and now having to kind of take stock of his life again and figure out who he is and what direction he wants his life to go. But it seems like he's got that under control, which makes me feel very good.
Yeah, I agree with you to what you said, even to start. Like, you know, each attempt at recovery each day, there's going to be met with challenges and opportunities. So I agree with you. I don't think it was failed. I think it was a learning. It was a step, you know, a step along to say, okay, this is what works. This is what doesn't work. As long as you can go back and analyze it. And the one thing I wish I would have said, and you know, Chaz will listen to this, is seek input from others. Because if he's left saying, hey, 2 days ago I placed a bet, let me analyze this in my own brain, he's going to have a biased opinion. The best thing to do is to seek counsel from somebody else outside who's not emotionally invested, right? When we're emotionally invested in something, we can't see it clearly. We're not going to see it with a rational brain. We're not going to see it for what it really is. So it's good to, like, hopefully he's also having conversations with those in his support network to really help flush out whatever's going on. Because if he just keeps it, doesn't talk about it with somebody else, he may not fully get to the root cause. Yeah.
And it reminds me of what a previous guest said on the show that resonated with me and you. And the quote was, never take advice from the last person you gambled with.
That's
because
right.
Most compulsive gamblers, the last person they gambled with was themselves. So you do need someone out there, a team of people, someone, an individual who can be there for you when you start having these thoughts of gambling again, recognizing that what that might do to your life. And I don't want to harp on it, but I do want to acknowledge, you know, it's hard to talk about suicide. It's very hard to talk about it. And yet we have to talk about it, not just from a gambling perspective, just mental health, you know, overall. And the reality is that gambling addicts commit suicide at a higher rate than alcoholics and drug addicts. And we can't be afraid to have those emotional conversations and let people share their stories of thinking about not waking up the next day, because they're very, very raw and very, very real. And we do have to find the comfort in speaking about being at that place in life. And I'm glad Chaz shared that with us, because that is very real. And always glad to have you here as a part of this. We'll do it again next Saturday. And any final thoughts, Dan? Go ahead.
You know, the one thing I'll say is when I was along my travels, Craig, I think the best school I went to was a school in Maine called Maine Maritime Academy. And it was towards the end of my trip. And the reason it really stood out to me is because the athletic director and the compliance said that every one of their coaches at Maine Maritime Academy is mental health first aid trained. And that really just jumped out to me, because they recognize the struggles that our youth 18 to 25 are having from a mental health perspective. So to have your coaches in athletics also trained for mental health first aid, I thought that was a home run. And that's something that I'm going to be taking and looking to really pursue and push and run with as I continue traveling around the country.
Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Have a great rest of your weekend. And we'll do this again next Saturday at 9 o'clock. Joe Beningo's coming up next. And thank you so much for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.